You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Welcome to the V3 Podcast with Dr. Ann Arvizu. Medical affairs innovators are changing the game for business success and making the world a better place for our patients. On the V3 Podcast, we showcase the vision, the voice, and the value of medical affairs. Each month, join host Dr. Ann Arvizu, a globally recognized medical affairs subject matter expert and awarded biotech industry executive veteran, for powerful interviews with today's acclaimed innovators and founders who are leading the profession forward into a new era. These high-level conversations will leave you inspired and equipped with future-focused ideas for changing culture and making an impact. And now, here's Anne.
Welcome back to The Vision, the Voice, and the Value of Medical Affairs. Once again, I am your host and the creator of the show, the V3 Podcast, Anne Arvizu. This is the future of medical affairs, and in terms of coronavirus and the illness it causes known as COVID-19, the future is right now. The focus of today's episode is providing guidance for a shift in how things are done in my industry during the first part, how we can think about healthcare professionals in general and how we are affected. And then I open up the conversation with a special guest expert on prevention to help answer the most common questions I've been receiving and asking what she's been receiving as well. The aim is to hopefully band together to better equip, protect, and prepare the healthcare professional so that they can help equip, protect, and prepare others when they field the questions. The tone of this planned podcast has shifted dramatically in the past 2 days when the WHO finally said, "This is a pandemic," which we knew it was already coming as healthcare professionals. In the past week, as I started to let people know what was going on in our industry, which is the healthcare industry at large, and specifically in the biotech industry, we were all busy canceling flights and canceling meetings, and I received a number of varying comments. As healthcare professionals, pharmacists, and physicians and nurses, we have been and are the front lines of this pandemic. And since the onset, we've been the first responders, depending on what we do, whether you're in a clinic or you're in a biopharmaceutical company right now, absolutely scrambling to try to help fix the situation. There's dozens of companies involved in that. And as HCPs, people are probably coming to you as they are to me to field questions about it. I've gotten tons of questions and tons of different commentary. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, when nobody was worried, I was canceling all trips and events because of the urgency I saw regarding the potential spread and the exponential increase that I believe we're still bracing for as of today. I am hopeful that when we look back and we contain this virus, and we will, that the percent dramatic spike doesn't hit the U.S. so hard. I'm hopeful for that, but we have to brace and prepare for the worst. The one thing that we can make happen is to provide the correct information. In a sea and pool of data and news and false news and whatever is going on out there, we really need to cut to the chase. And I'm going to provide some, I believe, excellent tools for you to use in your own practice. And good links for good research. I'll get to that in a bit. If you can hear in my voice isn't the normal strong voice it is since I actually just got back from a meeting that was in Miami Beach last week. And that meeting, I left the hotel. By the time I got home on Friday night, I was already starting to feel a little bit under the weather with a sore throat. And it's kind of not really a sore throat. It's just, you know, when you feel the pressure between your ear, the lymph node in your neck, and it's just like, oh, I think I'm coming down with something. Better take the packet of emergency or airborne and fend it off, whatever it is. It's still persisting. I'm taking my temperature. Nothing's happening. But I am a person too, and I'm a person over 50, and I'm a person with asthma. So, you know, in the biotech industry, as of a few weeks ago, no one else was worried, but situations in biotech companies shifted very, very quickly. I heard firsthand how companies like Ultragenyx and Ipsen's were halting all international travel, travel to conferences, and to their credit. For friends, family, or other non-healthcare groups that I was part of, I was asked, oh, isn't this just boy who cried wolf? Aren't you being doom and gloom? Isn't this just a flu? Isn't this just like all the other viruses? So people had some good and valid questions, but I would say no, this is a bad one, and I'm expecting and predicting an exponential increase. So people were kind of perking up and listening, but also, okay, it's life as usual. And let's face it, for me and some of the groups that I'm in, I'm a healthcare professional, but I'm also an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs need to create work for themselves. So it's a little bit, how do we cancel meetings where people have already paid for those meetings? So I love what I'm seeing in my industry as the healthcare industry, because we are seeing that history repeats itself. So I have been monitoring the data for the past several weeks across the globe, CDC, WHO, et cetera. And first and foremost, I want this podcast episode to help any and all healthcare professionals protect themselves better and be able to share the information with their patients and in their spheres of influence, even within their own families, and have some teachable moments. I may no longer be directly in clinical practice, and thank God for that right now, in a hospital or community pharmacy, but I held both of these roles, and my family holds both of these roles. I have a brother who's a pharmacist, a nephew who's a pharmacist, a niece who's a pharmacist, a niece-in-law who's a pharmacist, a niece who's a nurse. My husband's a physician, even though he's in the industry with me. We come from medical personnel all around us. My sister-in-law right now, she's also a nurse. She's working at a VA hospital and having to use one entrance in and out where they're taking her temperature every day. She has to get to work 2 hours early before her shift and leave through that same site. It's scary stuff for people who are working in communities and hospitals. In my hospital that's local to me, it's Cleveland Clinic, Florida, I contacted them this week to say, what's your position statement? Some hospitals are coming out with position statements, some aren't. As you can see, some airlines, you know, if you're in this industry and you travel a lot like I do, some airlines are coming out with position statements, and the ones I seem to fly with the most are not. And then airlines that I haven't flown with for years are coming out with position statements. Same thing with hotels. The group of hotels that I frequently travel with has not issued any statement yet, but others that I barely travel with are. I would just say at this point, I don't want to be at any hotel, any cruise ship, any airline. I don't want to be in a group above 100 people. I really don't want to be in. And so, you know, then it lends to the fact that, do we just say no to our lives right now? Or do we watch and wait and still have precaution? I can't tell you what to do. I only know what I would do because I am a person with asthma. You can hear it in my voice right now that I might be a little under the weather, and therefore I'm self-isolating just to make sure that whatever this becomes or doesn't become isn't affecting somebody else, because there is a very long incubation period, and it's more than just 14 days post-viral shedding. It could be up to a month or 40 days. So, a little bit of facts never hurt anybody. In fact, this is a bad one, and we are monitoring. So I want people in clinical practice and hospital and community pharmacy to be of utmost help to themselves first, because they are the people that help everybody else. And, you know, I've held both of these roles in the past. Like I said, I have loved ones in these roles right now. And I haven't been in those roles since before the summer of 1997. And in my last year of pharmacy, while I was an undergrad still, before I even entered my doctoral program, I put myself into the pharmaceutical industry. I broke in after hundreds of resumes. It's so much easier now these days because we have such bigger scope of research, especially due to genetics research and the biotech boom. But my heart is breaking for people who are getting sick on the front lines. My heart really breaks for the first doctor who died as a result of warning the public about this vicious virus he was seeing. He was called a whistleblower. He was 34 years old, and the news was suppressed. He was heckled by the police in his own state, saying, you know, he was creating hysteria and that he was wrong. You know, the government, any government does have a responsibility to contain mass hysteria, but it happens all too often that healthcare workers and scientists see something, say something, and are dismissed. It's a great disservice to those of us that have knowledge and can bring solutions. And it's one issue that does need to be corrected. Right now, that's not the issue at hand, but it's an issue for maybe another time, another podcast. I would urge people right now, if you are a person that thinks maybe you're sick or your kid is sick or whatever, and you're a lay person, non-healthcare professional listening to this podcast, to contact your own doctors. Click on the links below, educate yourself on good news that I'm going to provide in some of these links, and find out from your local health facilities and authorities to see what procedures are. People are looking online at procedures being posted that are really good, but they're actually coming from other countries. I actually got onto this one website from a hospital from the UK, and it was telling people, stay home. If you feel like you have this, you know, we don't have a test kit, or if you feel like you have this, this is when to come to the hospital. I wish our local hospitals would quickly create these kinds of position statements, post them to people. You know, now a lot of people are on facility use applications such as MyChart. And if we could talk to people in our databases regarding what policy would you recommend people to follow regarding testing or regarding when to stay home or when to go get tested? Do they even need to know they get tested? There's no treatment. So what's the point of going to a healthcare facility to find out for sure if you have COVID-19 or not? If you're having symptoms, stay home and stay away from other people. But there's so much information online and there's a lot of mixed information on the internet. People are not as trained as HCPs or healthcare professionals to feel empowered and think that they know sometimes more than people with 10 or 11 years of professional scientific critical thinking and training. They think they know the facts because they see something on the news. So I can't blame the public, because until yesterday, we've been presented with such a barrage of data coming from all four corners of the globe and opinion with global mixed messages across the board and across a variety of industries. So we hear on one hand, don't worry, everything will be fine, it's not here. And yet we saw people being stuck on a cruise ship or major events being canceled. At my salon just this week, Tuesday, I asked the esthetician, when are you going to stop giving facials? Like thinking he's going to be in face-to-face contact with people. And he said, oh, it's nothing. This is just another flu. And people were joking. I have a very, very happy little salon. And people were joking, right? Giving you the kind of elbow bumps instead of, instead of a fist bump, they're doing the elbow thing. But, you know, other people were just grabbing me and hugging me because that's just what we do. And we're social creatures as humans. And when you are in a community that, you know, in a salon you've been going to for over 10 years, that's the kind of thing that's happening. And we momentarily want that and need that in our day-to-day life, social connection. But in a situation like this, social isolation is going to become the new normal. Some of these people know that I am a top global medical information expert. Some don't. Some people know I own some kind of medical communications firm. Others don't. The esthetician didn't. I had just been meeting him and he was taking over and I had a facial booked for April. Others are asking me, what are the symptoms? What do I do? Do I go and be tested? If I have a fever, is it definitely COVID-19? People are destroyed for a lack of knowledge, but knowledge is only power or transformation, or in this case, prevention, if acted upon. If you don't know what that means, what medical information and medical communications are, we are the people inside the pharmaceutical industry at the front lines of gathering, interpreting, reporting, publishing, and disseminating. If you don't know what that means, in medical information and medical communications, we are the people at the front lines gathering, interpreting, reporting, publishing, and disseminating scientific data to educate other healthcare providers. So we are the healthcare providers and healthcare professionals that create and write and disseminate and publish that data so that others are, so that your doctors are more knowledgeable and that they can give you that information. So I'm that, okay? And people don't understand what that is. But right now, because I am in that industry and am in medical affairs, people don't know the true value of what medical affairs brings to the table. So right now in biotech and pharma companies across the globe, medical information teams and medical communications and publications teams have a huge opportunity to be recalibrating how they are running their business and thinking about what are they doing with regards to various operational functions within medical affairs. I have so many recommendations to give. And of course, it's on a case-by-case basis because many companies are at the front lines right now of developing or redeveloping products. We're going to talk about that later for the potential either slowing or stopping of this virus. And it's not just vaccine. On the communication side, congresses are these places where medical physicians and pharmacists and nurses go to receive more information. And the companies, the pharma companies, the biotech companies are the ones that really bring the data to life, bring the stakeholders together for those conversations, those very high level conversations, and equip leaders to go back to their, you know, pharmacies, their hospitals, et cetera, their medical practices. And right now we're banning international travel and stopping meetings. So we're going to slow some of this data dissemination. So medical information should right now be thinking of what new FAQ documents, what new SRD standard response documents should be urgently authored regarding the development of vaccines or similar issues or similar products that are now being repurposed in other countries outside of the realm of FDA approval, for example, in the US. And we have to be thinking of all these potential off-label uses and scenarios and be prepared for the questions to come in. Just because you are not making the vaccine doesn't mean that unsolicited medical information inquiries won't be coming in regarding medical illnesses or therapeutics or potential uses of the maybe related data that you have on file based on your product portfolio. That's just my take on it. I have a lot of experience in this area. And also, I would recommend that corporate communications teams can also be making homogenized statements from the company at large of what they're doing to protect employees, but also their patients who may be at risk. As a scientist, in the past 2 weeks, I have personally reviewed over 60 sources of information, and my top pick to stay in the know, my very, very top website that I have seen is called ourworldindata.com, and I'm going to post the link below. I want to make a disclaimer here because today on Forbes, even before recording this podcast and this introduction to the podcast, I saw an article saying that coronavirus is not the only virus out there. Forbes posted an article that, of course, there is some kind of malicious intent coming through computers right now. Some of the coronavirus maps are actually viral in nature. If you know, the type of virus that affects your computer. So there is malware being planted into some of these maps. So you have to even be careful which websites you're visiting, which news sources you're visiting. If it's some kind of a pop-up on the side of a newsletter, I would not open it. I'm going to give you links that I believe are safe, but sadly, I feel the need to make a disclaimer because of the world we live in and because of what's going on with malware and computer viruses as a malicious attempt to hop on the bandwagon and cause even more destruction. It's just unbelievable what we have to deal with. Stress and burnout are real things, and this is something we didn't need but are now dealing with. I want to give us the information to help just alleviate some of that stress. So Our World in Data is an excellent, excellent site. you will be able to see what the true cause and case fatality rate is globally, which as of March 9th, it was posted at 3.48% based on 109,578 confirmed cases and 3,809 deaths. It then describes the difference between the case fatality rate in China, which is at 3.86% based on 80,000 of those cases, 80,904 confirmed cases and 3,123 deaths. This is all of 2 days ago. And it talks about the case fatality rate for the rest of the world. And if you don't know, as a scientist, it's really easy to calculate the case fatality rate. It's just the number of deaths over the diagnosis, number of diagnosed patients, times 100. If there's a great chart actually on, that's why I'm saying these are the corona facts on this website. There's a great chart on there that shows, okay, well, we're at the tip of the iceberg. Maybe there's still a lot of undiagnosed cases, which of course dilutes the pool, the N100, right? So it drives the number down ever so slightly. And then the number varies based on region, state, area, date, et cetera. So going up and down, but some of the recent data that came out, and it's not even data, some recent reports on news came out that, oh, the rate's slowing in China. It's something like 0.7%. It is absolutely not. China had an exponential increase. It was going up, 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 November, December, January, and then boop, February. Like it went off the charts on an XY bar chart. So yesterday, we found that it's doubling very fast in the US. And you can see by number of days, we're at the bottom of that exponential increase. That boop. So doubling in 2 days rather than in 30 days, which is now the rate of doubling in China. So the rate of doubling has slowed per country. And this website is tracking that. I think that is really, really good. And something that if you're in a country that maybe governments have not yet mandated total closures of businesses such they have in Italy, but you want to know, what am I doing with my restaurant or my event or something like that? You can go to this website and get informed to make a better decision. Right before recording this introduction, I just got a call from my chiropractor, not his office, but my doctor himself, asking where I've been. And I've been meaning to call him, but I've been kind of sick and under the weather just from coming back. And I'm touched. So I let him know my throat's been bothering me. And he said, okay, okay. I said, I feel it's prudent to stay at home at this time and self-isolate. And I said, even though I have no fever, I might be just run down from stress going, you know, prior to this meeting, trying to get a lot of stuff done, full plate of work and fighting just a common cold maybe and strep, but I wouldn't want to put him at risk if it's something other than that. I'm in the over 50 category, as I said, and I'm a person with asthma, so I am a risk factor and he's a bit older. So what can we do to be wise, prevent the spread to ourselves and our and others around us and feel empowered rather than fearful by being prepared? My guest expert today is Dr. Suzanne Solomon, and she is the head of the Pharmacist Moms Group. The second half of this podcast is dedicated fully to prevention and clearing up frequently asked questions about preparedness. Suzanne Solomon is a PharmD with both residency and fellowship training, and she has authored over 100 peer-reviewed publications. She's a speaker and medical contributor on a variety of pharmacy topics. She has appeared on ABC7 New York and has been quoted in Crain's Chicago Business Magazine, Time Out Chicago, and The Daily Voice. She's also been a guest on numerous podcasts, and I'm very happy to have her as my special guest today. She'll tell you about the Pharmacy Moms Group. I'll ask her about that, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as we cover an article that she wrote in Pharmacy Times just last week. She's also a medical affairs senior executive working with the ACMA to provide training and education in medical affairs. She's got extensive experience in accreditation and assessment and has chaired numerous self-study committees. And again, she's the founder of Pharmacist Mom. So I'm excited to introduce her today. And I hope together we can empower you to get some of these frequently asked questions that I've been receiving answered. Let's get to the bottom of it now and join me in progress with Suzanne Solomon. Hi, Susie. Welcome to the V3 podcast. So happy to have you today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Ann.
Yeah. So, Susie, for people that don't know you, Suzanne Solomon, like I just said in my intro, she is the founder and the leader of the Pharmacist Moms Group, which is the largest women's-based pharmacist organization, really in the U.S. and I think around the world. So, Susie, first let us understand your scope of influence. Would you tell us about the Pharmacist Moms Group and really the scope of who you touch and interact with?
Sure. So the Pharmacist Moms Group is exactly that. We are the largest group of pharmacists in the country. All women. We're close to 33,000 right now, actually, in our group. We represent pharmacists from all over the country, and we have a few that are located in Europe as well.
That's great. And you recently just wrote a very excellent article in Pharmacy Times. You got together the pharmacist moms and really had a good think tank 2 weeks prior, really, to the escalation of what the public sees, right? As healthcare professionals, we're on the front lines as pharmacists, and there's about, 259,000 pharmacists, I believe, in the United States. Is that correct-ish?
Yeah.
So this article went out to a very broad group, and the group that, as you know, I'm a part of, you invited me to it, Pharmacist Moms, the 33,000 there that really weighed in with your panel of experts that you weighed in on this article. You created a great list of coronavirus preparedness. It was one that I was able to trust as a fellow healthcare professionals, print out, say to my family, we need to do this, look at, you know, what's going on right now. Because despite the fact that 2 weeks ago or a week ago, when I was asked by the public, what do you think? This is just like the bird flu, right? This is just another passing phase. It's not going to come here. And nobody, people were getting mixed messages, and that's nobody's fault. It's just that we as healthcare professionals have a little bit different take on what is research and what is data versus what is news and what are stories. And so you went through the data, and then you went through recommendations of what I consider anytime disaster preparedness, which is good. So I live in the state of Florida. We're preparing for hurricane season. We're used to that. In the state of California, they're used to getting kits ready for, you know, fires if they have to leave their house, if people are, you know, at risk of respiratory distress, having masks, etc. But most of the American public and beyond our borders are not. So you came up with a list of items that you recommended and that we should really have and keep nearby in case. So just as a high level, why don't you overview those buckets and kind of tell us the difference of what was published and what's different now because of things that are no longer in the stores or available to us.
Yeah, that's a great point. So Pharmacist Moms represents a group of, and we're fortunate enough to have pharmacists who are in hospital, who are in working in the community, working at a retail chain, working, you know, at an independent, working in pharma. So we have opinions of pharmacists with all different backgrounds, and it really helped to put together this list. So when we put together the list, it was really formed just kind of us talking as group, you know, what would you recommend? And we kind of boxed them into medications, both prescription and over-the-counter, then different household supplies that you would need, things you might need if you're a parent or if you have pets, and then other items, I would say more like miscellaneous items that you would need. And you're exactly right. Like, it's only been a couple of weeks, but in those 2 weeks, some of the household items, if you go to the store right now to get them, they're gone.
Yeah.
I mean, specifically today, I went to the grocery store to stock up on things, and because I'm worried myself that things are going to be gone, and there were no paper towels, no napkins, no toilet paper. I mean, none, zero. Like, the entire shelf was just empty. Mm-hmm. And it's scary because, you know, I have children, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't know what we're going to be doing in another 2 weeks if we don't have these supplies.
right? And cases of water at Costco are being rationed. About a week ago, they were being rationed at 3 cases per person, and now they're rationed at 2. I think it's going down to 1 as of this week. It is tedious to get out there while there's throngs of people. And preparedness is not necessarily worry. It's good to be prepared, right? So I think it's time to kind of rethink and get a little bit creative. So, you know, you had alcohol on your list, but you also had hand sanitizer and soap. So alcohol, people are like, well, do I get the 70% or the 99% or the 90%? Is it ethyl? Is it isopropyl? And at this point, you know, from a microbial standpoint, I went and got a few bottles of ethyl alcohol, which could make a great cleaner. I would get the 70% over the 90 or the 99% because the higher percentages, they evaporate more quickly, especially the ethyl. And the higher percentages, when they go through the cell wall, they don't lyse the virus because of a protein coagulation cascade. That's why the 70% is usually recommended. We know these things from pharmacy school, but most people don't. And so if people are only finding the 99% out there, well, it's better than nothing, but we can just make the recommendations that we can make. You made other recommendations that were great, and I thought it was really spot on to say, the time to pick up your medications is sooner than rather than later. Really, the time to get your refills is now, in capital letters. And I love that because I was like, oh, wow, you're right. Like, you're sounding the alarm and we need to follow suit. And I tried to let people know this last week and they were like, oh, it's fine. There's no problem. You're all doom and gloom. I mean, these are like some of the things that people said to me. And they said the same thing to these poor doctors in China. Who actually, it was even worse than that. You know, and I talked about that in the first part of the podcast. My heart breaks for them and their families and their mothers because they are gone now and they tried to let people know. And it is the government, all government's job to protect the public, but also to contain hysteria. So I get it, but at the same time, I'm really glad that you started to speak out. You also mentioned things like preventing nausea. People would not think about just having regular saltine crackers around or ginger ale or cola products because of potential, you know, symptoms they might be getting from the flu. Are there any things that you would add to the list now in retrospect that is, you know, something different because of things that are out?
You know, I think something that I didn't add on there, more from a health care professionals list, is really gloves. Yesterday, actually, in the pharmacist mom group, we had someone, an Italian pharmacist. She's actually in Italy right now. She lives and works in southern Italy, where the infections are pretty much still contained, but they're really increasing. Mm-hmm. And she said that she's been using the same gloves for weeks. Because there's no more gloves in the country. Mm-hmm. So she's been wearing the same gloves. There's no masks. And so I think one thing that I wish, you know, we would have prepared more when we're going to work as pharmacists and, you know, engaging with the public, I think having a mask would be important, but also having gloves as well, especially as we know this is definitely going to get worse, in my opinion. It's going to get worse before it gets better. So I would definitely add that onto the list is the gloves.
Yeah, that's great. And there are other items that really, that section of your article was great. And of course, the article will be posted below. Batteries, extra cash in case banks are closed. Copies of your passports, licenses, and birth certificates at the ready. You did also mention a Swiss Army knife. Why?
You know, that was recommended by quite a few women in the group. And at first I even said, why would someone, but then it was really just to have, just in case, you know, it was like, well, if you need to open something, cut something, you know, the power goes out, you have this just, kind of like a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout. It's up with you, just be prepared. And I think that was the sentiment from most people.
Yeah, I think that's wisdom. I mean, we do come from, you know, my husband and I, you know, Jaime and I, and we're in hurricane country, so batteries are always there, and every year we restock. Extra cash in case banks are closed is very forward thinking, and I think that's a great idea. We can look back and history repeats itself, and when a country goes into crisis and people are kind of left on their own, then you know cash is king. So we don't know what's about to happen, but what we do know from historical, looking at just XY data charts of increase in the number of cases, that they went up ever so slightly, and then there was a giant spike in exponential increase on the chart in China. And I believe what you believe, that we're heading towards that exponential spike. So I think it could be less in the US the more people hunker down. If you're sick, don't go out. I think another question that people have is, what do I do? Do I go to the pharmacy, or do I go to my doctor, or do I go to the emergency room to get tested if I have symptoms? And the answer that, for example, I contacted Cleveland Clinic this week and I contacted my doctor. What are you telling people? I wanted to know what the statement was from my local hospital, Cleveland Clinic, Florida. And the answer was monitor the CDC website. And the CDC website does have some great links. I'm going to put some very specific links down below in the article. But what's your take on that? What are pharmacists telling patients to do, or potential patients?
I think that, you know, we need to keep our healthcare workers healthy. We've seen this, you know, whether it's in China, South Korea, Italy, we need to learn from them. So if you're feeling sick and you have a fever, don't go to the doctor, try telemedicine first. I know even some of the pediatric offices where I live, you know, you're not even bringing your kid now. You're just going right on the telepharmacy, telemedicine, you know, and if you need medication from the pharmacy, have it delivered. Some of the chains even are offering free delivery right now. If you're sick and you're getting sicker and you believe you need to go to the emergency room, make sure that it's really valid. As we all know, as healthcare professionals, you can get even sicker and get more germs from the emergency room. So sometimes staying home is better than going there. But in worst case scenario, I think, you know, the recommendations are to call first, let them know so that they can have a self-quarantine room ready for you. I think my concern at this point is really just the number of self-quarantine rooms, number of negative pressure rooms, number of ventilators that we have in the United States. Will it be enough? You know, have we done enough as a society to prevent this? And, you know, I don't think we should panic, but I think that, you know, I think that we need to encourage all employees to work remotely if they can, you know, not go to large gatherings, whether they're spiritual or related to school outings. You know, I think the fact that the NBA suspended the season, it speaks volumes, and I'm actually really happy they did that.
It does. And, you know, and I think people can also monitor what's going on in their own state. So I have team here in Florida, and I also have team in California. And so I get a newsletter from from LA every single week. And it was like, oh, look what we can do. So the governor in California just yesterday said, if you're going to hold a meeting that is going to be 250 people or more, we recommend you cancel that meeting. And in Florida just last week, you know, the Ultra Music Festival, which is a mainstay here in South Florida, Miami, the Calle Ocho Festival, which means 8th Street, is a big Cuban festival. They were both canceled. And in South Florida, in Broward and Miami, it was 20,000 people last week. That number is going to be drastically reduced. So you're right. Faith-based services, synagogues, etc. I have an event this weekend, and I'd rather lose the few hundred dollars than get sick. And as you can hear, we talked before we started recording, you can hear my voice isn't what it is. I think it's because I've been doing a lot of podcasting lately, but also I was in a meeting at a hotel last week. And when I came home from that hotel, it was a stressful time leading up to the hotel. And you know how you know, your body kind of crashes after a meeting sometimes. So, but I'm checking my temperature, even though I have a little bit of a sore throat, it's been persisting. I don't quite have the symptoms. So let's go with that, because as a pharmacist, people are asking me, what are the major symptoms? So what are your pharmacist moms looking out for and talking to people about?
I think in general, if they have a fever, you know, that's when they need to be concerned. I think there's a lot of different things going out there about the difference between a cold or a fever and what it could be. You know, I think in general, I know that there's a COVID task force committee and they just released guidelines. And I think pharmacists are need to look at that. We know that the hospitals are going to overflow and we need to just really be prepared. I think they just released something that 1.5 million people will probably die within the next year from this, unless a medication is developed for it.
So we talked prior to the show about potential, let's clear up some information that I feel is a sticking point for some people as well, because that's another question I received. We know that it takes a long time to create a vaccine. I spent 6 years in research and development in vaccines and pediatrics and anti-infectives and antivirals at GlaxoSmithKline at the beginning of my career. And it's a 10-year journey that we're trying to reduce now into a year and a half. However, in China, there are uses because people are at the ready to say, what do we have? What antiretroviral treatments are out there that we can use now? What, you know, like the Ebola vaccine that was created by Gilead and was in production years ago. How can that potentially apply? What are we looking at with these viruses that have a crown and what's out there now that we can work with? And there's some brilliant scientists working on this, but of course there's FDA issues and how to license them. And there's miscommunication or at least misunderstanding from the general public standpoint to think, oh, isn't a vaccine coming out next month? Well, no, there's some safety trials that might happen or there's off-label use. So talk to us about some of the articles and references that you had cited.
Yeah, I mean, so basically what I've found is that there are so many things out there right now that they're looking at. They're, you know, I know that AbbVie's looking at something, Gilead, there's, you know, different antivirals that are out there. There's a few immunotherapies that are being looked at. I also saw information, since we know that it's going along the ACE pathway or the ARB pathway, that they're looking at ACEs and ARBs for potential treatment. They know that that's where it's going into the lungs. So there's a lot of information related to that. There are so many vaccines. I think the list that I saw this morning had, you know, I want to say like 8 or 9 different alt immune, applied DNA. You know, I can go on and on. J&J, I think, had some in Sanofi. There were others as well, you know, looking at vaccines. I think questions that we're getting as pharmacists that I see coming up in the group often are, how can I enroll in a clinical trial? I want to be someone who can try to get this vaccine. You know, I want to, you know, and where to go and what to do and what are the next steps? And I think that's what we can get out more to the public is related to how they can help.
And people are wondering how, you know, you touched on something important because, you know, aside from those companies, Gilead, Moderna, AbbVie, Vir, you know, Inovo, Novavax, there are combinations of products like AbbVie's HIV drugs, antiretrovirals, ritonavir, lopinavir, are being used at hospitals. Kaletra, is that going to be more effective than an antiviral medicine like an interferon alpha 2B in treating patients? We don't know yet. And then there's the vaccine issue itself. So there's treatment and use of what's there. And then there's the production of a potential vaccine. And that production of a potential vaccine is taking on different modalities depending on the country that's trying to develop it. So for again what they're doing in China off-label, what you're hearing about coming out of Israel and what's being used in the US, very different things. So really good to keep an ear to the ground on what's going on and what gives people hope and how they can help. Because is it true that the blood of patients who've died is what's being used from China to develop the initial vaccines? Because now, so that lends to the fact that if you've already had COVID-19, does that mean that you are now immune to getting it again? I don't know the answer to that question. Do you?
No. And I think that's the interesting, it's a great question because I've you know, I would assume you would be, right? You can't get that same infection twice. That's what we've learned in school. Then there's cases that are coming out that I've read. I don't know if you've seen them, but in South Korea, where people are saying that they're getting reinfected.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You wonder if there's more than one strain, and you know what's going on, because scientifically we've always learned that there was just one way. You know, you're done. You build that up, and you're good from it. An immunology perspective, but I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I know that the COVID task force committee said that it looks like it's going to be a yearly condition, and it might turn into a seasonal virus infection, mm-hmm. which is similar to the flu but more deadly. Mm-hmm. But they're hoping vaccines will be developed by then.
Right, and it makes you brought up a good point, which is the potential of mutation. And I did see that there already is a mutated form of the virus. I did see that, and I'm not sure if it came out of Korea or China. I will find the article and I will post that with everything else. But that makes that creating a vaccine that much harder, because then it's like, okay, we're starting over again if we have to look at this gene mutation or this mutation that we're finding in the virus itself. So that goes back to a new question that I wanted to ask you, and that is, who's really at more risk? Because there is a misconception, and I've heard it over and over last week. Well, isn't that just immunocompromised patients? Well, immunocompromised, we think about people with cancer, we think about HIV, AIDS, maybe even primary immunodeficiencies, because we know in healthcare that those types of illnesses that maybe the general public's not even aware of exist. But the WHO has criteria that came out today that if you are, if you have high blood pressure, if you have kidney disease, if you have heart disease or a cardiovascular issue, an arrhythmia, asthma, diabetes, right? If the people are saying, oh, this is only in the elderly. Well, the largest group of patients that died in China were 50 to 59 years old. So I have some, different links that I'm recommending that you could, wherever you are listening to this in your own country, you can pick out the data for your own country. And, that's something. So is there anything else that you would add to that list? If you say, stay home, this puts you more at risk. Here's the pharmacist moms group. I have like the mom of the pharmacist moms group right here on the line. When would you keep your kids home and why?
I've already kept my kids home.
Okay.
And the reason why I began to keep them home was I believe that as a healthcare professional, it's the best thing I could do. I took an oath to serve my profession, to keep healthcare workers healthy. My kids do not need to be in school right now. I have the ability to work from home. I have the ability to watch them, keep them home, teach them what they need to learn for right now. I think whatever we can do to limit, social, we need to socially isolate. I really believe that. We could even do more probably even when it comes to going out to restaurants, things like that. But I believe that right now, because patients who are sick, maybe people who have cancer or are on dialysis or someone who, has to have their appendix out, I think that they're going to need hospitals, and we don't want the hospitals filled with everyone with COVID. I mean, I think we could really learn from Italy. I think one of my changes.
Yes.
Points was when communicating with some of the pharmacists in Italy and just hearing their stories, and it was real. It was just hearing directly from the source. It wasn't the news. It wasn't the media. It was these pharmacists. And if feel free, anyone to join, join the group. You can see it with your own eyes. And that was to me the time when I said, you know what, I'm not going to put my family out there. We have to keep our healthcare workers healthy, and I'm not going to add to this mess.
Right. And, in our industry, as an entrepreneur, I can work from home. My husband works for Ultragenyx. They were one of the first companies that said, nope, no more international travel. And now all their offices are closed. So this is happening across our industry and has been for weeks. While major, major conferences are going on, right? I don't know, and I spoke in the first part of this podcast about the impact of medical communication, specifically the medical publications. What can we do for congresses? You know, some alternatives that companies can be thinking about, medical information, et cetera, because that's my expertise. But from a very basic healthcare professional standpoint, my brother is a pharmacist, right? There's kids at home. Some of us don't have little kids that we can just keep from school. Some of us have 25-year-olds living at home like we do. Our daughter Jamie's a biotechnologist. She goes into a lab every day. She's the vector, right? We're not the vector. We're staying home and kind of self-isolating. She could bring it to us, and she's got maybe a higher immune system than we do. So we've had to say and have these conversations and use your article as like a basis for these conversations. So thank you very much for that. Any last words?
You know, I just think that at this point, everyone needs to do what they can. I think I posted this out today, this morning, actually on my social media, but you know, we're the United States. We need to be ahead of the game. You know, we have the ability, we have the technology, we've communicated, we've seen this happening in other countries. We really need to get it together. You know, keep everyone home if they can stay home. We need to help advance. You know, I'm praying for pharma to come up with something. Yeah. I really believe in science. And I think, you know, science is going to make a difference for everyone. But I think in the meantime, we all have to stay healthy.
Excellent. Susie, thank you so much for joining me today, and I will see you in the Pharmacist Moms group.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the V3 Podcast, part of the ACMA Podcast Series, in collaboration with the Pharmacy Podcast Network. For all of the ACMA podcasts, please go to acmapodcast.com.